Welcome to Season 2, Episode 9 of Our Voices, Our Community. Each week we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss social, political, and economic issues, but also arts and cultural and much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Roanoke, the New River Valley, and Southwest Virginia. Today, we are joined by Will Solari, Kathleen Strongberg, and how you doing today?
I'm good. Ready to go.
You ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Well, you know, I'm ready to go, too. I mean, of course, we're taping on the day is my anniversary. I wanted to do a nice shout-out to my wife here.
Joining us in the studio.
Happy anniversary, guys.
Yeah. And so I'm glad that she's being patient with me as we're doing the taping of the podcast.
True love.
Well, that is true love.
We'll make it excerpt. Passionate today for you guys.
Okay, you know what? Okay, we're going to leave this alone. Okay, well, let's get started with today. I know you very interested about the mayoral race that is coming up.
Sure.
I believe in May. Well, we really don't know yet, do we? I think they're going to discuss the possibility of changing the elections from May to November. I think that's in city council this month. Is that correct?
Yeah, they looked at moving them to November to help increase turnout.
Yeah. I think we're all in agreement that we wanted to do that. Am I right?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, there are some arguments against, but I don't think they were good enough.
Yeah. I mean, on one hand, having turnout be historically low is really good if you probably won't win an election.
I think
local elections are super important, so
yeah,
having them on the same stage as our state and federal elections, national elections, I think are really important.
Well, I know that the mayor elections is up, as well as three other seats in city council as well. And David Bowers, our former mayor, has made a decision that he is going to put his hat into the race for possibly being reelected as mayor. Yeah. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's good. And wasn't he mayor before, Lee, right?
I distinctly recall, yes.
You recall that.
Yes,
okay,
that's so when I first realized that I had to get involved in local politics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe there was a Syrian refugee comment.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess he's taking a vacation, and then he's decided he wants to get back into politics and local government. So what do you guys think about this, William?
You know, when I moved back to Roanoke, Bowers first popped up on my radar when him and the other Dave were building Elmwood Park, and Mayor Bowers was going on about how much he hated skateboarders and how they better stay out of here, and they're going to spend all this extra money to persecute skateboarders, and that they spent $10,000 putting little ornate leaves on benches so that skateboarders couldn't grind on them or use them for skateboarding or whatever, but then wouldn't do anything for that community to help alleviate that problem. Between that and like paying Sheryl Crow like $100,000 to come just because, I don't know.
Who was this?
Sheryl Crow.
Oh, Sheryl Crow.
Every day is a winding road. Oh. Sheryl Crow.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed this.
Yeah, when they were launching Elmwood, you know, there was that video of Bowers and Trinkle on stage having had a few cocktails, being like, every day is a winding road. Elmwood Park.
Did they sing that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
When they announced the thing. And so I was watching this, like, in shock and horror. And, you know, the other thing was that, like,
especially the horror part.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you talk very poorly of skateboarders, who are very near and dear to my heart, as everyone knows. You ask Sheryl Crow to come, and, you know, taste is subjective or whatever, but they were like, we'll give you $70,000. And Sheryl Crow was like, no, I want $100,000. And they're like, okay.
Oh, wow.
Just take all the money.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of money.
And it just sort of reinforced this sort of old boys club, this kind of, you know, Southern Roanoke club that they were, or South Roanoke club that they're sort of part of, him and Dave Trinkle were. And it rubbed me really the wrong way. And then, as you said, Kathryn, once we got to you know, the stuff with the Syrian refugees and his comments about internment camps and bringing Roanoke into this like very harsh national spotlight. That was actually how I got involved in politics.
We kind of met, I didn't really know you before then, and you started giving information out about that, like all the sudden emergency city council meeting where everybody looks at each other, but Powers wasn't even there.
Yep.
Right. And everybody looks at each other and goes, "This is not how we do it." Wow. And the guy who did it isn't here.
Well, it wasn't us as a city either.
Yeah.
And I think that's what kind of my issue is that I think Dave Bowers is a very well-meaning gentleman. I've seen him practice as a lawyer, as a public defendant and prosecutor, and he was fantastic. But I think he really needs to stay in that capacity.
Well, yeah. I mean, I known Mr. Bowers ever since I was young. He was a mentee of Noel Taylor, I believe, when he was rising up in the ranks, and I actually like Mr. Bowers, I really do. However, you know what really concerns me, and is the fact that he's saying that he's running for mayor, which is fine. It's about how he's running for mayor that I have an issue with. It's the fact that he's running. He's a Democrat. He's a Democrat. He's been promoting being a Democrat for many years, and now he is taking the stance that if he's going to run, he's going to run as an independent. Which to me, and you know, full disclosure, I'm very a part of the Democratic Party. So yeah. Full disclosure, I have an issue with that. You just can't jump ship when it's convenient for you to run for a campaign. If you're going to run be a part of a party affiliation, you're either going to run as the party or not. And if you want to run for mayor, he needs to go through a primary process. Period. You just don't say, "Oh well, I'm not going to skip the primary and just flip to independent and run for mayor." If you're going to run as a party affiliation, whether it's Republican or Democrat, you need to do that. And that's my issue with it.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You can't go around saying, "Oh, I'm Democrat light," or "I'm this," or "I'm that." I mean, no. Like, either you're participating in the Democratic process, like, you know, in the Democratic, you know, party process, or you're not. And if you're not, then you're not a Democrat, and you've left the party, and that association is over. And you better not be touting it on your campaign literature.
Right. We have too many, you know, I'm not going to throw any names out there, but we just have too many people pretending to be Democrats, and then all of a sudden, when it's convenient, they want to switch. I just have a huge problem with that.
Well, but that's the story of him and David Trinkle, though, right? They were they ran as independents for the city. Their party was called something along. They had a different name for when they all originally ran as independents.
Is that when we were running with Alfred Dow too?
I think so.
Yeah, and then I heard about that.
And then switched over to Democrats because I mean, you know, frankly, you know, Michelle's an independent. Bill Bespich is independent. You know, John Garland is independent, but they all have sort of progressive leanings in some of their views and stance, and so I think they are truly independent. I think that old guard were closer to Republicans, and you can't be elected as a Republican in Roanoke City, and so they sort of made that jump. And you know, one of the things that really spoke volumes to me about that sort of early stages of getting involved in politics in Roanoke was that divide that used to be in the Democratic Party here, where you did have Bowers and Dave Trinkle and that whole camp on one side, and then everyone else who were more of the traditional Democrats who were part of that party and had been part of that party for a long time on the other side. And so, frankly, that's why a lot of the candidates that I worked for, we had long talks and discussions about running as independents versus trying to join the Democratic Party, because of that odd divide in the party at the time.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I agree. If you have philosophical issues with either the Republican or Democratic Party, I mean, and you feel like you have an independent view, then runners are independent. I just feel that if you've been, you know, you have individuals who've been involved in the Democratic Party for so long and been representative of the Democratic Party and engaging in Democratic Party activities yeah. and events and support, then all of a sudden you're just going to flip a switch because it's convenient and it makes yeah. it more appropriate to do something. I disagree with that.
Dave Trinkle set the standard there in that when he, you know, after the very close primary, mm-hmm. a bunch of people tried to say, you know, oh, and he kind of flirted with it for a minute about, you know, running as an independent after having lost Democratic primary. And he didn't go through with that. And I emailed him at the time and I was like, buddy, don't you dare. Right. So just as, you know, as a principal thing. And I think that he was right to see that that's not a good way to go.
Right.
And that you can't kind of have half one foot in, half one foot out, that you're either in or you're out.
Right. So. I agree totally. So there has been some news. Actually, you know, we keep thinking that Mayor Lee is going to run, but I've been reading some editorial in the Roanoke Times. As of right now, he hasn't truly decided whether he will seek a second term, although he says he is leaning toward it, mm-hmm. but he has not fully announced that.
I also feel like between Mayor Lee and Vice Mayor Cobb, if Lee does not decide to run, that we're in good hands. I don't think, you know, if Sherman doesn't run, that the ship's going to sink and Bowers is going to be mayor again. I think
there'll be a new in this election. There'll be a new vice mayor because
right
yeah.
because
his term is only 2 years. Yeah. yeah,
right. Well, I'm saying if I hope my finger is crossed under the table right now that if Sherman doesn't run, that Joe Cobb will run for mayor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that move. You know, I think that Anita Price could also run. You know, she was the vice mayor before, but I don't know that she wants to. So I think that she has a lot of, you know, I just haven't seen her like doing the kinds of things that you would do if you were going to run. So,
well, yeah, I don't even know if she's even planning on
running
for
yeah.
for the seat.
Great question.
So who all's up? It's
Anita.
It's Anita Michelle.
Anita Price, Michelle Davis, and Trish. Trish Boyd.
Oh, that's right. Because she has
right.
John's
seat. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think
and
that.
And then you have Mayor Lee's.
Yeah. So.
Has anyone made any moves or thoughts about council?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I haven't been hearing much of anything.
No.
But, I mean, I think first figure out when the election is. That'll help people.
Well, yeah, I think once we make a decision whether, I mean, they need, from my understanding, they only need four votes, a majority vote.
Sure.
Okay.
To switch the elections, and so it's interesting. Again, you mean you have a Democratic majority. I mean, you have.
I mean, I think they have the votes. They should.
Well, here's the thing. They should.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they do it or not is interesting. And I think that's probably, I think a lot of people are waiting to see how people are going to vote on this. I truly believe if you think you have four Democratic seats on council.
Well, four? Five.
Is it five?
Yeah. Trish, Anita, Joe, Juna, Sherman. Five.
Okay. I'm gonna hold my comments.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hold my. But if you have,
see, normally, okay,
yeah,
so
no, yeah.
Let me just interrupt and say, normally I hold my comments, or
yeah,
I get a look
yeah,
to hold my comments.
Yeah, sometimes
but now you're getting the.
Yeah, sometimes you have
look.
To say you have to realize that some of the comments we make are forever. So I'm gonna rehold my comments on it. But we should have a majority on council to make the decision. I just hope I believe that they're going to have discussions, and hopefully we can get a resolution to this, and hopefully we'll either be May or November. So, and even if it ain't, we might still have to do the May election anyway.
One
it
more
might
time.
Be one
yeah.
more time. So.
Well, and also closing this out, I'm curious you guys' thoughts, because this was a position I once held pretty strongly, and then I've, you know, I go back and forth on. Do party politics have a place in local politics, local elections, city council, and whatnot. I mean, it's good to know where people stand, for sure.
Right.
But that was one of the issues, you know, we were kind of, when I was helping with John Garland's campaign, was John didn't really fit anywhere very well. And it sort of brought up the question, well, do you even need to run as a Republican or Democrat?
Well, I think, well, number one, if I can answer it,
sure,
I don't
know. Sure,
yeah.
Yeah. For number just whatever you guys think.
Well, I think it does. I think it does. I think it's important to have that kind of affiliation because it talks about the doctrine and the philosophy of what you make judgments and how you run run local government and state as well. So I think it's important to have that kind of doctrine and philosophies behind it. This is a conversation we can probably have for another podcast.
I know.
So
yeah.
While as I am signaling Karen to tell her there may be another subject that we can talk about that. But I think it's a good conversation though.
Yeah.
And we might have actually it'd be good to have maybe having one from each independent Republican, if we can find one, and Democrat on board to have a discussion.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. I mean, Bill Bespich would be a great study in that, too.
A great what, Republican?
No, independent.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
My answer is I've also gone back and forth on this in that there was a time when I would have definitely said, like, we should get the party politics out of our local government because we'll just make better decisions. But that was in an era when the Democratic Party in Roanoke was super, I want to use the word dysfunctional. I think that's the right word. That the internal politics of the Democratic Party in Roanoke were so messed up that you could not get them to do anything right. And you couldn't even get them to do anything neutral. They'd probably do something that was harmful. So now things are running much better. So
yeah.
I feel like it's not... Now you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because the baby's good.
it was Beth Deal and who else came on board recently?
Robert.
I already said I disclosed. I already gave you disclosure.
I mean, I'm just saying.
So, all right. Well, we'll see. We'll follow the mayoral race and see who else will pop up. I think it's going to be interesting, though. Just the fact that both of those two gentlemen are deciding to run already. Well, Mary Lee hasn't decided yet, but I mean,
let's have them on the show.
I'm looking to leave the tea leaves. Yeah.
You know,
well, maybe
ask them point blank.
Well, maybe we should do a debate.
What you want to do?
Yeah.
We should schedule a debate. We should.
Oh,
all
that'd be great.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Okay. Well, let's move on. Let's move on here because we have some other things to talk about. I know you guys have been following the Amber Geiger trial that's in Dallas. The young police officer who murdered Botham Jean in his own apartment. The verdict was surprising, I guess, not surprising, but it was correct, I believe. But it was a different story. There was a lot of discussion about the trial and actually the sentencing. I believe in the sentencing, not only did the brother of Botham Jean hug defendant, the convicted.
Gave the judge a Bible.
Did the judge give him a hug or
her? Yeah, the judge was female too.
Oh,
yeah.
She gave her a hug as well.
Yeah.
And I guess the bailiff was stroking her hair as well. That's kind of weird, isn't it? it is.
I mean, there's from the inception of this crime, because that's handedly what it was, to the sentencing and everything about it has been troubling. I don't even know if it's weird. I almost feel like it's typical because, you know, again, the focus of the trial was that she was text messaging with the person she was having an affair with. And so they changed the narrative of this trial of police officers having this unrecognized bias when it comes to whether they shoot someone or not, don't you think she's just a morally, you know, wrong person, and so therefore then she totally shot him. And I think that's unfair because I think they put her on trial for almost being a woman. And I guarantee you if the same thing had happened probably with a white male police officer historically, as we've seen with every other trial with police misconduct in regards to fatally shooting a black person, the white officer usually goes free.
Well, it would concern me. I mean, that's a concern. What also concerned me, the man was in his own home.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, you know what I'm saying?
It's horrifying.
The man was in his own home eating a bowl of, I believe it was ice cream or food, or something. He was eating food in his own home. And someone comes in and shoots him.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I mean, for me, when I heard that, my wife actually told me this, and I looked, well, was he outside? No, he was at home. I mean, and she came in, and then she claims that she walked in the wrong apartment, which her apartment is a floor.
Above.
Is it above or below?
I think it's. Whatever,
it wasn't on the same floor.
Yeah, it was a different floor.
And how can you just shoot someone, and then she said she didn't recognize. I mean, to me, it just sounds a lot of garbage to me in trying to justify that.
I mean, here's my thing. If you are so distracted that you cannot tell that you're going into your own apartment or not,
why would you pull out a gun?
Yes.
Or why would you allow that person to have a gun?
I mean, yeah, so 6 ways from Sunday, exactly. I mean, apparently she'd worked some double shift and was, I'm tired, blah, blah. But then don't let police officers work double shifts. You know, if we're going to let them work double shifts on the second shift, maybe they don't get a gun. I mean, come on.
Or like, take their gun home.
Yeah.
Well, and,
this is a great point. Like, police officers have super high suicide rates. They actually don't need their guns at home.
And I think you brought up a good point, Catherine, in that, you know, outside of work, you are a citizen just like everybody else. You know, and this thing that happened while she was not on duty, while she was not on a call. There was no probable cause, no nothing else. And so I don't know why they would treat it in any other way than her being just a straightforward citizen. Because if I walked into someone's house on purpose or mistake and killed someone, I would go to jail. I mean, and she's going to jail too.
Yeah.
But they made it, try to make it this issue about her being a police officer and all these other things. And I get that person deserves a fair trial and defense and all those things. But it really had less to do with her being a police officer and really just, frankly, more of her breaking the law.
Yeah, she just broke the law.
I mean, it just amazes me how we let all these kind of things go on. And then when somebody like me is, you know, or you says, well, we shouldn't let police officers take their guns home, people look at us like we're the crazy ones. Well, no, this is perfectly sane thing to say. Like, they don't let Israeli, the defense forces take their guns home because they were killing themselves. Right. Like, this is not a crazy thing to say. This is something that other police forces, other, you know, the military, you don't have, like, you don't walk around your military base with live ammo. That's not how it works.
So you're saying when a police officer is on duty, when they get off duty, they should lock up their arms. Is that what you're saying?
That would be great for police officers' domestic violence rates. It would be great for their suicide rates. It would probably be great for their overall mental health in terms of, you know, not walking around in this sort of almost like hyper vigilant, like I got to be ready to. I mean, a police officer in California shot a guy who was mentally, who was having, was
a
not,
seizure he, or something like that.
It wasn't a seizure. I mean, he had some change in medication and he had like long standing mental health problems, and he shoved the guy, and the guy shot him for shoving him. I mean, and the parents are screaming. Maybe it was either in California or Texas, but it's just horrific. And that guy got away with it because it was in public, I guess. So,
well, you probably know this, Catherine. What's the law where you can stand your ground and?
So stand your ground is in public, right? So stand your ground is in public, but the castle doctrine is literally your goes back to English castle days, like your castle.
Yeah, the castle doctrine, which I know is a thing in Texas.
It's a thing everywhere, actually.
Imagine if this went the other way around. A police officer off duty walked into someone's house and the person didn't know who they were, saw that they were armed and shot the police officer.
Right. So there,
if a black guy had done this, if you'd reversed the situation and he was technically totally in the right, No one would defend him.
So there are a ton of arguments about this as well, about no-knock raids, where they just come in and they bang the door down mm-hmm. and they don't announce that, hey, this is the police.
Right.
And those no-knock, like, flash bang grenade raids, I mean, you don't know, like, that, you know, that they're, like, doing some sort of, like,
or it's a home invasion.
Yeah, you don't know, like, oh, this is the police. Well, people have, like, both been shot themselves because they were holding guns in that instance, and also shot police officers. Like, I think there was a grandma who shot a police officer because they banged down the wrong door. And so they banged down her, you know, some grandma's door. It wasn't even the right house. And she shot the police officer, and the police officer shot her. And I think there was, I think she was killed, and so were the police officer. Wow. I mean, you just cannot be banging down people's doors.
Well, no. What about the sentencing part? I mean, she received 10 years for basically murder.
Right.
10 years. I mean, to me, we have people in jail for nonviolent crimes.
Yeah.
You know, getting life sentences. And we have someone who was murdered get 10 years.
So I would say she's not going to be a police officer anymore.
Well, that doesn't mean she committed
murder.
She's
not going to have gun rights anymore. I know. But, like, I got to look at the way she did it and the fact that, you know, when we talk about prison, like, what's the point of prison, right? Is it to, like, if you're going to justify more prison for her, that all that's going to do in the end is going to justify more prison for people who have fewer privileges than her. Well, you know what I'm saying? So you can't, like, wind it in that direction. So, like, if we're going to unwind it, like, I'm like, okay, let's bring down everybody else's sentences, too, is my thing. You know, for
nonviolent crimes, I mean,
sure.
No one should be doing life for nonviolent crimes. I mean, for me, I think if you create murder and rape or something like that, I think there should be longer sentences for those type of crimes. But she's getting 10 years, and you have others. I mean, there was a story recently, a federal judge sentences a 21-year-old to 10 days in jail for missing jury duty. And this young man, he overslept.
Yeah.
And he gets 10 days, and he's a, from my understanding from the story, he's a solid student.
Yeah.
Never been in jail for anything.
That judge was a jerk.
And yeah. and got sentenced for 10 days for that.
Well, and I think you see a lot of the problems. It's very apparent with either leaving too much stuff up to a judge's discretion, and then conversely having standardized laws, you know, on the drug side of it. And nonviolent sentencing, having standardized or what's the word I'm looking for? Not standardized, but minimal sentencing and required sentencing for certain nonviolent crimes is ridiculous. But then again, you have these cases like with that guy who got 10 days in jail for missing jury duty. Sure, maybe he gets fined. Maybe he has to do jury duty without
paying
for a day or whatever.
Like, especially he's never been to jail before.
Right.
And he's a
I mean,
good student. He's a student.
The sentence should be jury duty twice. Like that's the sentence. Like, okay, you inconvenienced everybody. Now you have to do jury duty twice. Like, right. That's a reasonable sentence.
Well, again, you know, I think if we look at these outliers, hopefully they're outliers, like the guy who got sentenced to 10 days, or, you know, the woman who went to jail for I don't know how many years for putting her daughter in a different school district. Those kind of things you hope are the bad side. Because, I mean, I'm sure not, just like not all cops are bad, not all judges are bad and whatever else. But with that said, there should be a much easier appeals process. There should be a much fairer system for these kind of things. And again, with the woman in Dallas, you know, I don't think she meant to kill that person. I mean, you know, I don't think she got up that morning and was like, you know what I'm going to do today? Like, there wasn't a diary or a smoking gun, you know, pointing to her saying, yeah, she totally got up this morning and decided she was going to go kill a stranger.
Yeah.
At the same time, 10 years is...
So for me, I mean, I think a lot of murder actually works that way, is that people get scared or angry in the moment and they shoot somebody.
Well, let me ask you this. If this police woman was black, do you feel like she still would get 10 years?
No. I think it would have been way higher.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying. If she was a white man, she probably not wouldn't have got any time. You know?
They'll try to justify it, you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at all the...
It just takes one.
The white officers who have... shot unarmed men for nonviolent crimes, have killed unarmed men, primarily black men, for unarmed crimes, who have never seen a day in jail. Some of them lost their jobs, but for the most part, because of their like hyper willingness, I guess, to use lethal force or violence in those situations, people are dead and they'll never see a day in jail. And those are the people that worry me more than this person who freaked out, maybe had a bit of an unconscious bias and shot a guy. It's the people who are choking someone for selling a cigarette and not like letting go. They're like the pit bulls, you know, of like the bad pit bulls anyways, of like police officers.
And the fact that they're still on the force somewhere to shoot somebody else. Exactly. That's, I mean, that's the scary.
And that kind of thing is encouraged too.
Yeah. There was the woman in, was it Oklahoma, who shot a guy? Who was outside of his car. He was unarmed. She was a police officer, and she's still on the force. I mean, she was in her uniform and like on duty, but I mean,
I mean, to answer your question, Robert, I think there's a huge racial prejudice to this. And if you look at anything in this realm, whether it's the NRA's willingness to defend you, if you're a black person who's a gun owner instead of, you know, your typical, it's that really obvious, you know, racist component to it is there, whether people, you know, are happy or comfortable about that or not.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, I hope we can really look at the issue of...
I want to say one more thing.
No, go ahead.
That lady, she did not just have unconscious biases. Like, so this came out like right at the very end when everything was going crazy, but they put her social media, some of her social media, some of the things she said on social media as part of the... as part of her sentencing, and she had said some pretty like racist, like scary, like just like, I'm, you know, she was very trigger happy on social media. I will say that. So
they
certainly
use social media as part of her sentencing.
They put it forth and they put it forth as part of the sentencing, and it was not good. It was pretty, I mean, she was very pro, you know, very much pro gun, pro like, I mean, honestly, you know, when you say, I don't think she got up to kill someone, like some of her social media honestly was that bravado. Like
I think it's a real danger for people who have those kind of unchecked biases and who, whether intentionally or not, frequent those waters too hard. You know, like, well, I don't want to kill anybody, but I mean, if somebody came in my house, believe you me, I'd shoot them, you know, die. You know, I would, you know, I'm lucky I got my gun on me. For people who constantly think that way, whether they know it or not, are putting themselves in those kind of situations, or not putting themselves in those situations, but are going to be the ones who are going to act in a lethal way, usually in those situations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay, so hopefully we can kind of look at how the judicial system, look at how they sentence crimes. I believe it's really, they sentence across the racial lines, unfortunately, and we need to do a better job in how we select our judges, number one.
Yeah.
I mean, that's important because they have a critical role, as well as the prosecutors, and that's one thing I've learned. The prosecutors have tremendous power.
Speaking of local elections.
Yes.
Yeah,
speaking of local elections, tremendous power of how they sentence and make recommendations for sentencing. And even make recommendations to indict. I mean, so
yeah.
We really need to look and examine our judicial system. Can I say it?
Judicial system.
Thank you. More. And so, well, speaking of indictments, on Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, on September 24th, she announced the House will initiate a formal impeachment inquiry against our beloved President Trump. President Trump will become only the fourth president in American history to face impeachment. To face impeachment, not be impeached, but to face impeachment. President Andre Johnson, I think it was a little bit before my time. And
Andrew.
See, that's why I got asked, was before my time. Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton were both impeached and were later acquitted by the Senate. And I believe Andrew Johnson, I think he, I think it was one vote away from being impeached in the Senate. I read up on this one, even though I called him Andre, but Andrew. But I did read that he was one vote shy of being actually literally thrown out.
Andre was his French nickname.
Is that his French name? Okay. We're going to Paris anyway. I'm trying to learn a better way.
And
Richard Nixon, of course, was faced. Impeachment, but of course he decided to
resign before.
He decided to skip town. He needed, he resigned and skipped town before he before that happened. So, yeah, what do you think? What's going on with him?
So
you think
lucky.
They're actually
going
to get an impeachment out of the House? I don't think they're going to get out of the Senate, but you think they're going to happen out of the House?
Oh yeah, Nancy found a spine, and now all the her. She's checking the opinion polls, and they're looking good in her direction. So I think that's definitely happening. I mean, I'm a little disappointed in the length of time it took to locate her spine, but now that she's found it, I think that it's pretty firm. So,
well, and I think this whole process, despite the president referring it to it as another witch hunt by the corrupt media, it really comes down to what we tolerate as a society. I think beyond the finer details of whether or not Trump meant to ask for aid from a foreign country or do a handful of things that no one in their right mind would do, because frankly, most of the things he does aren't things people in their right mind would do. I think it comes down to what we're going to tolerate as a society. I mean, even people within, I was listening to a thing on the way over here about Cambridge Analytics, that company that mined data to target people who are susceptible to conspiracy theories and extreme right wing beliefs. It was like Steve Bannon, their company, and Rudy Giuliani's law firm working on whether it was legal for people in Russia to be funding all this.
Well, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but Rudy Giuliani, how can he? He's not representing the U.S.
No,
but he's over there in Ukraine.
And
look, representing. I mean,
a noun, a verb, and 9/11. Yeah, that guy has been a menace for a long time.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, all this stuff of Trump, whether it's his most recent thing, whether it's the way that he's handling it, whether it's like doubling down and asking China for help investigating a political opponent, it's really troubling. And it's really a lot of the same people doing these horrible things over and over and over. And whether we can prove it or not, and whether we're going to do anything about it, is really secondary to the fact that behavior like this sets a precedence for everyone else. If Donald Trump can get away with it, then Mitch McConnell is going to keep doing this crap. Eventually, Democrats are going to start in on this. Our whole society is going to run on disinformation and whoever can pay the most to get out of trouble.
I also believe in the fact that I'm very supportive of the individuals, the whistleblowers,
absolutely,
to really come up, to come forward with this, in spite of that dark cloud of a government we have right now, because it's the fact that they just finally just said enough is enough.
I mean, I'm just going to say, I hope that they are safe, because I mean, we just talked earlier about somebody who testified in a trial,
right,
and like Russia has a history of like executing Russians in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So here's to hoping that those people are safe.
Well, Brian Epstein's fine.
Yeah. Well, I know the ambassador to former ambassador to the Ukraine was supposed to testify actually today, as we're taping, the day of taping, and the White House blocked it.
Yeah, can we talk about that for a second? When the State Department is actively interfering with an investigation by the House, there is a huge problem with whoever is running the State Department.
Exactly.
Because clearly they don't understand. I mean, and this is systemic throughout the entire Trump administration, and the people that are left of his cabinet and the people he's appointed But I mean, even Rick Perry somehow is tied up in this. Like, and you know,
it's not a crime if a white guy does it.
Texas, right? Who's the energy secretary now?
Yeah.
Who's in charge of the nuclear?
I just want to recall that Rick Perry was for abolishing the Department of Energy before he was in charge of it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's remember.
So, I mean, it's garbage in, garbage out. And I think that's going to be either, again, whether this is Trump meant to formally, in a criminal way, ask for help, or whether he's just so stupid that he would do that and not think there's a problem with it, or he's so arrogant that he thinks he could do that and there won't be a problem with it. America really, really has to take a stand. And I'm not like, I'm not the like libertarian, like huge defender of the Constitution that like a lot of people are, but this is a circumstance where I really do believe that our fundamental freedoms and our security as a people is at danger.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I agree totally. Well, let me ask you this question. Okay, so we do indict Trump. Impeachment. Okay, he's impeached according to the House of Representatives, and the Senate doesn't convict him. What happens? I mean, I know it's on record. History shows that they at least did something regarding this madness, and I think that's part of it. I think it's one of the reasons. But
think he's wounded. I certainly think that forcing all these Republicans onto the record is, especially the Senate Republicans, with elections bearing down on the Senate as well as on Trump, is important. To know where they stood on this issue is essential. So I think that's essential. And having that information for the voters in November 2020 is maybe the most important part, more important than actually how the vote, you know, exactly what the total and tally is on the vote. I think that it's most important to just have that information.
Okay.
Well, and I think Catherine's right, especially in regards to people like Mitch McConnell. You know, when the CIA figured out that Russia had definitely interfered with the election, was interfering with the election, the news went straight to all the important people, you know, and Mitch McConnell was one of the people in the room who held up, you know, announcing to the public, trying to do something about it, trying to better protect us against interference in elections on the part of people like Russia or outside parties. And that kind of got washed under the rug because it was able to stay, you know, in these back rooms and whatever else. But again, if we do impeach Trump within the House and it gets railroaded by the Senate because of people and obstructionists, and frankly, that's exactly what they are, obstructionists like Mitch McConnell, in defense of essentially making money by way of your party, because there's really no defendable grounds to say, well, you know, we let this go on because, well, we're just loyal Republicans. Well, why are you loyal Republicans then if this even goes against Republican values? Well, frankly, we made a lot of money doing this. So sorry, everyone else.
Yeah.
I think, again, having that own show will damage them in the 2020 elections. And I think that the best case scenario, if Trump is not impeached, is that it severely cost him the election in 2020.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be an ongoing saga.
Yeah.
I believe they're trying to, at least my understanding, trying to get this wrapped up this year before going into the 2020 election cycle. So hopefully we can get let's get a resolution on this.
What do you guys think about Mike Pence as president?
I just want to remind everyone, Mike Pence was actually unpopular in Indiana.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He wasn't liked in Indiana. Why?
I don't think he's liked anywhere.
I don't think he's that good at politics. But I think he's good in at a certain thing, but I don't think that thing is going to be, you know, stepping into the void left by an impeached Republican Trump still tweeting at everyone unless he's actually in prison and they take the phone away.
I just think they just probably just want a clean house and try to start all over again with that, with Trump and Pence. If I was a Republican, I would just like, let's just get rid of him. If he wants to be impeach him. Let's start fresh, brand new, and try to start reviving the Republican Party. That's what I would do.
Well,
because he's a lost cause. He's no hope.
Well, do you want to know something scary? I was driving through Bristol this weekend, And there was signs out in the area of town we work for a variety of elections, and there's people who, for their political signs, make sure that they say Trump Republican, which, again, I'm not a member of that party, but if I were, that would worry me a lot.
That's all your party is.
Yeah, that's the Tea Party on meth. I mean, that's the worst case. That you're splintering the Republican Party even further towards this thing that neither cares about conservative values, cares about more values, anything that any pillars that the Republican Party stood on once.
Mm-hmm. That made some sense, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. On some days, if you looked at it sideways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so I'm bothered by the fact that, like, people are out there loving on George W. Bush right now, rehabilitating him. I think they're already starting their party rehabilitation process. I think that it's out there going. I mean, he was the worst. The worst.
Well,
Except now he seems better. And that's not okay.
And that's the reason why they like him. I mean,
although
I guess if he was a Republican and you see Bush and then you say, he was an idiot. We knew
Democrats.
He was an idiot. But we knew he was an idiot. But Trump is just a straight crook.
I mean,
he's admitting it. I mean, the only thing you realize, he's admitted to so many things. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I feel like Bush was better at crime. I mean, I honestly feel that he was better at it. Cheney is great at crime. Number one crimer.
Well, if he really didn't have a clue, I mean, I guess it was good. I don't think he really had a clue what was going on.
I think he knew
you
enough.
You think he had a clue?
To outsource all his crime to Dick Cheney. Yes.
Okay. Well.
That's how, if you're a patrician, you have a guy that does the crime and covers it up really well. I think that's what they were great at.
Well, his daddy's friend.
Yeah.
It was his daddy's friend. Well, okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap this up. We're going to be start talking. Now we're going to be Bush bashing, and that's not a part of the podcast today. We can save that for another time.
That's my special edition.
So thank you guys, as always, great. And again, you know, we have to do our roundtable about what you're looking forward to this week. And Catherine,
I'm going to school board tonight, so I'll report back next week on how it goes.
Oh, okay.
About the buses,
about the fact that I have not totaled it all up, but how much have we spent on security theater? I am tired of, speaking of 9/11 and George Bush and all those evil people, and Rudy Giuliani, we are spending how much money on BS security theater when kids in Roanoke are safer at school than they are in their own homes and in, you know, businesses or, you know, in places out and about in the community. Mm-hmm. And we're fortifying our schools. We're spending money on this. We're spending money on, you know, extra SROs, extra this, extra that. There's no proof that this works. There's no proof this improves safety. You know, they are hiring a bunch of social workers.
I'm going to come back around.
They do some good stuff, but the part where they do the bad stuff is super annoying. So, but the bad part that they really did was, you know, they're not paying enough for the busing, and they're not paying the bus drivers what they're worth, and it's time to just start paying people what they're worth on the busing and just, you know, bite it and get it over
with. Get what you pay for.
Yeah. And what we're not paying enough because it's horrible.
Yeah, I also think they need to change the school board to be more elections.
But I'm going to yell at the unelected ones right now.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, I don't know how I feel entirely about the entire context of Dave Chappelle's last stand-up thing, but he made a point about, like, if you're telling people how to avoid an active shooter within your school and one of the kids at the school is the shooter, you're also telling them what to do. So really, how well does this planning and kind of scare tactics about what to do in case of a shooter in your school actually work?
No proof that it works. It's just hire more social workers, hire more psychologists. That actually works. Definitive proof that it works.
Yeah. Well, Will, what are you looking forward to this week?
I'm looking forward to how these impeachment hearings play out. Also, what happens in the Court of Appeals with Trump's tax returns. I mean, again, it's all, they all seem like
was denied, right? Trump's appeal, wasn't it?
His first claim that he didn't have to release his tax returns because of executive power was denied by a federal judge because that would be an abuse of executive power. So they said you have to release your tax returns, and then they're appealing it right now to a court of judges rather than just one judge.
Okay.
Hopefully they all share the same opinion. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think like the tax returns, like the State Department interfering, like all the text messages, like all the people that have been paid off, like every single thing that isn't, again, the end of the world, but is indicative of a larger problem, these things are going to come to a head at some point.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think, you know, once you have enough definitive evidence lined up to say, like, look, maybe we're not going to impeach him for using campaign funds to pay off a adult film star that he was sleeping with, and maybe we're not going to really push too hard on this Russia thing, and maybe we're not, you know, once those things completely litter the playing field, what else can you do? And I think those tax returns are going to be really telling. I think the general shift, I think, in the legal system, hopefully, and the American public in general, I think, is going to be big. So I'm looking forward to to seeing how that plays out as well.
You know, I always say, follow the money.
Oh,
at the end of the day,
yes,
you follow the money.
Yep.
When everything happens. So, for me, well, two things actually. Once again, I announced it as my wedding anniversary. So
yay!
I look forward to having a very happy and spectacular wedding. Well, not wedding, and we have wedding anniversary.
You better not have another wedding.
We're gonna do it. Actually, our wedding was in a hurricane. Yeah, so that's an interesting story. Don't want to hear about it now, but I'm looking forward to that.
Well, now I kind of do.
Everybody gets married. We don't have much time left to talk about
it. Our song, we got married in a fever. No, maybe not. All right, we got married in a fever, not a hurricane. All right.
But secondly, I am very curious about the mayoral race, if I'm saying it correctly, because we're talking about leadership that we've already seen. We're not getting anything new. You have Mayor Bowers. I like how he's a great man. I think he's a good man. I think he has good intentions. But he's already, in my opinion, ran his course of ideas and creativity that he's already possessed being the mayor when he was mayor. And, you know, Mayor Lee, I have great respect for him as well. We have to have a better job being more creative in how we're going to grow our city, and I'm fearing that we're not getting that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because the mayoral thing also touches on the state politics, because they've really been held back at the mayoral and city council level by the state politics, and I, you know, frankly, hopefully they'll be somewhat unleashed from that, from those cuffs, and be put and be able to really show us what they can do.
Yeah.
And so I think that might be a significant departure from what we've been seeing.
Yeah.
And it might be real positive. People might be pretty happy about it. So, you know, he might have a real legacy to, you know, to put forth, to say that he's got, you know, he's made a real stamp on the city in a positive direction, and we should follow that through.
Yeah.
So
how do you guys think you fix that then? I mean, do you,
in terms of the state level, or
no, the local level? I mean, because again, we've talked about this before, that the part of what's prohibitive about running for city council, for mayor, is that you either have to be retired, you have to have a job that's so on board with you doing this that you can afford to do it, in which case there's some conflict of interest there.
Yeah, all rich people are rich enough. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, or, you know, it makes it very, I think, prohibitive to get new blood in there, or people who necessarily can't afford to take 3 months off to campaign, or can't can't survive on a city council salary.
Well, I think you know, we're about to wrap up this show. I don't want to start this up again, but I do think there's ways. I'm amazed when people really want to do things and get things done some particular way, they actually get it done. I mean, if it's really that much of a concern and they're really interested in how to solve these issues seriously, we always figured a way. Our community always, people always figure a way to get it done. You know, it's like paying a light bill. You know, my light bill might be $400. My lights might be getting cut off, but I figure a way. I might not have the $400, but my lights will still stay on. Yeah. And there's a way you can do it. And so it just takes energy and it takes creativity. And if you're passionate about it, get it done, we'll get it done. And then I think we can do that. So I'm pontificating a little bit. So we're going to wrap up this show. But this is great. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you guys joining us today, joining me today. And I look forward to next week.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7 Radio Free Roanoke.
Card game.
If you like what you've heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you.